So the last couple of weeks, we've been looking together at the book of Proverbs and the issue of wisdom. And we've been saying that wisdom is this ability that we desperately need in order to live life well, because wisdom is this ability to know what the right thing to do is in the majority of life situations where it's not so simple as knowing the moral rules. Something more is needed. We need wisdom so often. And we've considered how we grow in wisdom, walking down the path of wisdom, left foot, right foot, habits, disciplines that over time make us wise. And at the heart of that really is a process of learning to attend to our hearts and guard our hearts, for our hearts are the wellspring of our lives. We're going to pivot now in the next few weeks. And we're going to pivot to consider a number of different proverbs. That's where the book gets its name. These short sayings, little pithy statements, some of them just a verse long, that are found through chapter 10 and 31 of this book. And you might have noticed that up to this point, we've been working in chapters 1 to 9. And each of these, in their own way, provide us some insight into different areas of our life. And where we're going to start this morning is look at what this book has to say about the process of growing in wisdom with our words, the ways in which we communicate and use our language. But before we get to there, let me just say a few introductory words about this portion of the book. How do we understand these little sayings, these proverbs? Well, it's important to know a couple things about them. First, that they are often very brief, very pointed statements that express things that are generally understood to be true. They typically don't argue for the truth of what they state. They just state it. They typically don't nuance that truth. It's often a perspective on the truth. Think of them this way. They often are making observations on life. Observations of how life typically works in the world. Insights. Sometimes advice. They don't teach things that are always true all the time. In fact, they often require wisdom to know when to apply them. What circumstances does this saying apply to, and what circumstances does it apply to here? And let me just give you an example to illustrate it. Proverbs 26 is as good as any. Do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you will be like him yourself. Answer a fool according to his folly, or he will be wise in his own eyes. So which is it? Do you answer the fool or don't you answer the fool? Well, it depends. It depends, quite frankly, on what kind of fool you're talking to. It depends on the circumstances that you're dealing with. You see, you not only need to know the proverb, but you need to be able to read people, circumstances, know when to apply each one, know what kind of fool gets an answer and what kind of fool doesn't get an answer. And many of the proverbs are like this. They're circumstantial. They're also written in a poetic style, which means, and maybe you're like me, you went through school and you did not get poetry. You're frustrated by poetry. I have a much healthier appreciation of poetry as I've gotten older, and I lament the trouble I gave my English teachers over the years. Because poetry is beautiful when you start to understand it. It says a lot with a few words. Not one of my gifts, as many of you know. And it's vivid. It uses images. It speaks in ways that other types of language can't speak. But here's the thing about poetry, especially proverbs, they invite our reflection. I love the way Tim Keller puts it. He says this, a proverb is like hard candy. If you just bite down on it, you get little out of it. You may even break a tooth. Instead, you must meditate on it. Suck on it, in a sense, until its sweetness of insight comes to you. So let's look at some of the bits of hard candy, so to speak, in this book and what it has to say with words. I mentioned this a few weeks ago. This book says a lot about words. And it's because growing to be wise with our words is a critical skill to becoming a wise person and to doing well in life. How you speak will have a huge impact on your life. And so let's look at what this book has to teach us. And the first thing that we need, if we're going to become wise with our words, is we must recognize the power of our words. Our words have the power, we'll discover, of life and death. Our words have the power to heal or to destroy. Let's look at a few examples in the book. From Proverbs 12:18, reckless words pierce like a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. Notice with me, words have the power to do damage. They cut. They penetrate like a sword. And it's damage that you can't undo often. You know, when you say a word, you can't unsay it. And sometimes you wish you could. You're like, oh, did that come out my mouth? Yeah, it did. And you can't take it back. And the damage it's done often can't always be fully undone. And think of the image. It's so vivid. It's like a sword. It pierces somebody. It cuts. And yeah, sure, you can take the sword out, but the wound will remain. Often, the scar will last. And it not only does damage to other people, but it does damage to your own integrity and reputation. It's, you know, it's an image of just words that are just reckless, slashing, hurting people. Who wants to be around someone who's wielding a sword and slashing wildly with their words? These are the kinds of people that we avoid. Another Proverbs 18:21 says this, the tongue has the power of life and death. Those who love it will eat its fruit. See, words can not only wound, they can kill. They have the power of death. And one of the reasons that words have this power is because words name things. Name a child stupid or ugly. Or loser. And that child may spend the rest of their life trying to deal with being named that. Many of you know exactly what I'm talking about. Those were ways that you were named. You see, things that you are told, things that you've been named, they're like a toxic, poisonous chemical. And when they get into the ground, they sort of seep in and they start to pollute everything. Something inside of you starts to wither over time. Things said to you, things said about you can pollute everything. They pollute the way you see yourself and you struggle with self-image the rest of your life. They pollute the way that you see and interact with other people, the way you engage your world. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can actually destroy my soul. Would be a far more accurate rendition of that childhood playground taunt. Words get inside the poison that's toxic, that can destroy. Now, we've been highlighting the negative power of words, but to wound, to kill, but words have positive power too. They, in the words of 12:18, the tongue has this power to bring healing, the power of life, the power, in the words of Proverbs 16:24, to bring a sweetness. Notice this one, the image. Pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul, healing to the bones, like a honeycomb overflowing with honey. Not only that would that bring great delight to Winnie the Pooh, but it would be, it's just an image in the ancient world. Honey was believed to have medicinal value, to heal as a salve, and it was sweet to the taste. Wise words spoken at the right time are like that. They're sweet. They can heal even those wounds left by the swords that we wield. And it begs a question. I've hinted at it a little bit. Why do words have so much power? Notice the imagery used in verse 21 of 18. Those who love the tongue will eat its fruit. Another image. And as Keller puts it, words are like food. And if we're honest with ourselves, there's like a hunger inside of our souls, a word hunger, if you will. We need words. We need words to live. We need words to be nourished. We need words to feed us. And we need those words both from the inside and from the outside. What do I mean by that? We need words from inside of us that will nourish us. Words that will express our deepest thoughts and our deepest feelings. words that others can understand. You see, one of the things that we all long for is we long to be known, to be seen. And there can be nothing more frustrating sometimes, especially in the closest of relationships where you can't get out. You can't put to words what you're genuinely feeling inside. It's so frustrating. You want to express what's inside. You want to be known. You want to be understood. You need words inside, but we also need words from outside. We need other people to speak words to us, over us. Words of love. Words of affection. Words of delight. Words that would affirm us. Words that would communicate, I see you. Oh, I see you. You are wanted. I understand you. You matter. You're loved. Desperately, each of us need those words. And one of the most awful things we can do with our words is withhold them, giving others the silent treatment, as if they were not worthy of our words. We starve them of the food that their souls desperately need. Words that would nourish, words that would build up. So if words have this kind of power, either to hurt or destroy or to heal, to bring life, it really starts to beg an important question that we need to consider. So what do the words that bring life, what do the words that bring healing, what do the words that are good food for the soul, what do those words look like? What is the quality and nature of wise words? Let me highlight a few characteristics that are found throughout the book. We could sit here for a while. There's a lot here. I've chosen a few of the characteristics that stand out in this book. And as we go through these, I just invite you to ponder and reflect. Use it as a little bit of a time to personally reflect and evaluate. Would these words describe your words? The first, wise words are honest. They're truthful. Wise words need to be honest. Proverbs 12:19 puts it this way, truthful lips endure forever, but a lying tongue lasts only for a moment. And notice the observation being made. Lies often do last for a moment. They often have the appearance of truth, and they wear the clothing of truth, and they can have the ring of truth to them. But usually, not always, but usually over time, the truth is found out. The lie is discovered. There's something about truth that endures. Lies last only for a moment. Ask any child who's told a big whopper and can't sleep that night and wakes up with a sick gut feeling and a sick stomach, and they say, Mom, Dad, you know what I told you last night? Total lie. Total BS. I'm sorry. That's usually how it goes. Not always. Not universally true, as we said earlier, but it's often how it goes. It's usually how life works best. It's what's so frustrating about our social dialogue lately. What's true? What's false? Proverbs 15:4 speaks a bit into that. The tongue that brings healing is like a tree of life, but a deceitful tongue crushes the spirit. You know, lies are one thing, but deceit's a little bit different. It's a little more subtle. A deceit often is some form of exaggeration where we either overstate what's the case or we don't quite fully represent what's actually going on. We just downplay it. Well, it's really no big deal. What I said wasn't that bad. You know, deception is crushing. It destroys trust. It wrecks integrity. Any parent will know this if you feel like your child's being deceptive, not always being straight with you. It's really hard to trust them. And we see this play out on a large scale in our society. When societies live in a space where we can't trust the media, we can't trust advertising, we can't trust the government, things really start to fall apart. In a world of so-called fake news, who do you believe? Who do you trust? It's crushing. Another characteristic of wise words is they are restrained. They are restrained. Proverbs 10:19 is one of the places that we could go. When words are many, sin is not absent. But he who holds his tongue is wise. I say, the more you say, given the power of words, the more you say, the more opportunity you have for problems to arise. And it's a contrast here. The wise use their words very carefully, very sparingly, with restraint. The wise have learned that you don't always need to say everything. And it's not an encouragement to not speak out. It's not an encouragement to sort of just keep everything to yourself. Don't share your thoughts. Don't speak what's on your mind. That's not what it's saying. Rather, it's an observation about life that when someone has a lot to say and words are many, that just multiplies the opportunities for words to go sideways and to do harm. Better to say less than more. Third, the nature of wise words are timely. Proverbs 10:32, I love the image here. The lips of the righteous know what is fitting. What fits? The wise choose words that fit the sensibilities of the listener, that fit the mood, the context, the circumstances, that just know what the right time is. That's the sense of this. And it's reinforced with the imagery in Proverbs 25. And here's a hard candy for us. A word aptly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver. Don't bite down on that one. What's it saying? Let's think about it. This word aptly has to do with timing. Something that's apt is a word that's spoken, the right word, right time. And a right word at the right time is like an apple of gold, we're told. It has, in other words, it has its own value. It's a precious thing. But when it's spoken at the right time, it's as if this gold apple is given a setting of silver that just enhances its beauty and its value. See, wise words are timed well. And the person who's growing in wisdom with their words is always learning to adapt their words and craft them to the circumstances, to the needs, the capacities of the person that you're speaking to. It's an invitation to do everything you possibly can to make sure that what you're saying is hearable to the one listening. What might that look like? Reading another person, you walk into the room to engage in conversation with them, and then modifying your tone of voice, your body language, to fit where they're at, to fit their personality. You know, introverted people need a lot of time and patience and space to draw out. You don't go to an introverted person and say, "Speak your mind, would you? Come on, get up, get out with it." Right, a wise person would modify and respect this person needs some time to process, to communicate what they're thinking. It's reading the circumstances and knowing when it's why when it's timely, apt to be gentle, and when it's apt to be louder. Or another one that I've wrestled with a lot in my life is you got a point to make in the conversation, right? And you want this person to get your point. Sometimes wisdom is taking that point and instead of hammering them over the head with it, turning that point into a question. A question that invites their reflection, that invites them and nudges them closer to the point that you're trying to make. What do you think about this? How do you think that went last night when you said that? How was that for you? Sometimes much more wiser than, "I can't believe you said that. How could you do that last night? You really annoyed me." I think you know which one is going to have a better outcome. At least I know the one that's going to have a better outcome in my house. And sometimes this looks like just, you know, knowing when the person has capacity for you to vent. Sometimes we use an image, Andrea and I, is, you know, it's like I feel like a fire hydrant. I've got a lot to gush out right now. Well, guess what? The other person's not always ready to stand in the flow of your fire hydrant. And sometimes it's better to go for a walk and vent to yourself or to the neighbors or to the cat or dog in the street. What some of my neighbors must think, I don't even know. There he goes again for a walk. Must be venting. Wise words are forth thoughtful, not rash. Proverbs 15:28 speaks into this. The heart of the righteous weighs its answers, but the mouth of the wicked gushes evil. And this proverb points to the reflective nature of wise people, it contrasting itself with the impulsive nature of fools. It's, you know, we have a saying like you think before you speak. That's exactly what this proverb is saying. But it's also a subtle warning about listening to those who are always so quick to offer up their opinion and advice. Anyone know someone like that? Always quick to offer their opinion, their advice. They always got something to say. Gushing. This proverb says, be careful. Or another one that reinforces, he who answers before listening, this is his folly and his shame. Yeah, this one usually doesn't work out well for me either. But you know how this goes. You're in a conversation with someone that gets a little bit heated. You know what you want to say. And yeah, the other person's talking, they're getting animated, but you're not even paying attention to what they're saying. You're not paying attention to their body language. All you can think about is how you're going to respond. Wisdom is listening to the whole person, what they're saying, how they're saying it, tone of voice, body language. Maybe what you had to say just, you know, need to like park it for now and not say it at all. Thoughtful. The wise become more thoughtful. The final one I want to highlight is wise words are gentle. They're kind. Proverbs 15:1-2, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. We're commended here to speak gently. But what does that mean, to be gentle? Does it mean that we should be soft, quiet, passive, sensitive? Is gentle work with boldness? I think we need another proverb, and we have several, but let me point to 25:15. Through patience, a ruler can be persuaded, and a gentle tongue can break a bone. Aha, another piece of hard candy. What is that saying? A gentle tongue can break a bone. Bruce Waltke, in his commentary, puts it this way. The bone is the most rigid body part inside of a person. And this saying, to break the bone here, refers to breaking down the deepest, most hardened resistance that a person may possess towards an idea. You've probably had conversations like this. This person's just not going to hear what you have to say. The walls have gone up. The resistance is strong. You are not going to get your point across. That's what it's envisioning. And so see, if we put this together, gentle words can be pointed. Gentle words can argue a point. They can challenge. They can push back. They can even rebuke. But what they are not is harsh. That's the contrast in the first verse that we read. A gentle answer turns away the wrath, but a harsh word, right, just throws another log on the fire. It stirs up anger. And that word harsh means to inflict pain. And when it's used of words, it means that it's imagining words that are critical, unduly cruel or blunt, often with the purpose to cause hurt. Maybe it's unintended hurt. Maybe it's intentional. It's harsh. Causes pain. It's unduly cruel, critical. So how do you do gentle? How do you speak? How do you break down the resistance of someone without falling into harshness? Keller captures the sense of this well, I think, and he writes this. Here's the test. Your language has to be motivated not to put the person in their place. Oh, that's so easy to do. Not to prove they're wrong, not to belittle them. The motivation has to be nothing but love. A gentle word is bone-breakingly clear, yet in tone, in purpose, in voice, in motivation, it's kind. Here's how you can tell. He goes on to write, whether you're being gentle in what you're saying. When the listener says, I don't want to hear what this person is telling me, but it's very obvious they love me, and I can tell it's really painful for them to say it. If that's how the person's responding, that's a clue that you're finding your way into gentleness. You might have something hard to say, but you're saying it in love. And the person you're saying it to can know and see, this is hard for you to say. I see that. It's not the sarcasm, the put down, the harshness that persuades, but words that are gentle and kind that will break down resistance and turn away wrath. Now, maybe you're like me, and as I was writing this and thinking about it, and now you're hearing it, you get to this point, you say, ouch. Ouch. Maybe there's a lot of room for me to grow in becoming wise with my words. You see, just knowing this list of attributes or characteristics of wise words isn't enough. Oh, sure, you could take this list and you could memorize it and you could even do an audit every night, reflecting back on your day, evaluating how you did with your words. Were they truthful and were they gentle and were they thoughtful and were you restrained? And you could commit to trying harder. You could even find good accountability partners that would check in with you and say, hey, how's it going? Are you growing in wisdom with your words? And hear me now, it's not that those would be bad things. In fact, those would be good things. And if some of this has resonated a little more than you'd like to admit this morning, then those might be really helpful steps, actually. But they're not enough. Well, we need something more, something that cuts deeper. Something that the book of Proverbs, in fact, provides. You see, words reveal our hearts and how much they need to be healed. Proverbs 16:23, a wise man's heart guards or guides his mouth. Here we are again, the heart, the wellspring of life. This core, this center of who we are, out of which all our thoughts and words and actions arise. We mentioned this last time in passing and said a lot about this last Sunday, actually. But I want to look again at Jesus' words, this time from the Gospel of Matthew, where Jesus says this, make a tree good and its fruit will be good. Or make a tree bad and its fruit will be bad. For a tree is recognized by its fruit. For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. I think of the tree, right? The nature of the tree's root system and trunk is going to determine what type of fruit the tree will bear. And the heart's the same way. The nature of your heart will determine what comes out of your mouth. What the heart is full of is what the mouth will speak. The implication is this, the only thing that will ultimately change your words and heal them is if you experience change and healing inside your heart and what you fill your heart with. For what fills your heart will determine how you speak. All, put another way, all of our mouth problems in the end are heart problems. Let me be honest with you this morning, but when I pay attention to my words, when I do some of those things I talked about, audit them and reflect on them and even invite other people to speak honestly with me, how do you experience my words? Yeah, convicting. I begin to feel and recognize that I'm a much more broken and flawed man than I'd like to admit. See, the problem with our words is that so often they reveal a heart that's divided. And so once again, we're back to this question, what is going on inside my heart? Words often reveal a heart that's full of so many other things. We called them functional gods last Sunday, but these gods that compete with the God that we profess in. Let me close again with another illustration from my own life so you can see this. When I was a young dad, kids were younger, I would struggle with why at times I would get angry and biting in my words to my kids. When I saw it, I hated it. I didn't want it. I experienced far too much of that as a kid, and I wanted to be different. I needed and wanted to change. And over time, because of mentors and wise mentors God brought into my life, I began to learn to attend to what's filling my heart. I began to wrestle with this question. the kinds of questions we looked at last week, what my words revealed to me. And so why would I get angry with my words? Well, I discovered that it often depended on the context. So let me give you two to illustrate. If it happened at home, which it did it often, it was often because my kids were challenging my heart's desire for comfort and quiet. You see, at that moment, when they were intruding on what I was filling my heart with, I deserve a quiet night. I want comfort and quiet in my home, and you're disrupting that. In that moment, what my heart was full of, my desire, my entitled desire towards comfort and quiet, spilled out of my mouth in harsh words. Can't you be quiet? Go to your room. Won't you guys stop arguing? Go play somewhere else. Can't you see? Trying to watch TV here and trying to enjoy a quiet moment. Why are you disrupting that? Well, it was a lot different when I was in public, because I wouldn't do that. Who would do that in public? That's embarrassing. Oh, it's more subtle in public, right? But when I was in public, it was often because their behavior was threatening another desire of my heart, and that was the desire for a good reputation. I wanted to be respected as a good parent. I wanted to have kids that other people saw, wow, look at how well-behaved those kids are. You're an amazing dad. So at that moment, when they were threatening that desire to have control, to save face, that's what my heart was full of. In that moment, my words spilled out of what my heart was full of. But it looked a little bit different in that context. It was the stink eye. I'll talk to you when we get home. Don't you do that. Or it was, you know, you just grab your kid and rush somewhere that's private, no one else can see. I wonder what happened. I don't know. Maybe you had to go to the bathroom. So what's going on? As I sought to grow in wisdom with my words, I realized I needed to grow in confessing the way my heart was full of so many other things, how divided my heart was. And I was and still am often led to the cross to confess. To confess that I'm far more flawed and broken with my words than I'd like to admit. Jesus had to die. Jesus had to die for all the ways that I've screwed up with my words, hurt other people, hurt myself, hurt him in the process. But at the same time, coming to the cross drives me to rejoice. We spoke about this earlier at the table. You're needy, but you're loved. And it's at the cross that I began to rejoice in the one who lived a perfectly wise life with his words. There's only one person who's walked this earth who got it right every time. Every word, honest, true. Every word, necessary, timely. Every word, thoughtful. Every word, gentle. And they mocked him relentlessly, the cross, hurling insults at him, using his own words to taunt him. You who are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself. Come down from that cross if you're the Son of God. And they spit on him and mocked him. And yet look at the way he restrained his words, even at the darkest moment of his life. The words of Isaiah 53 ring true. He was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, and yet he was silent. And then notice when he did open his mouth, what did he say? Even to his mockers, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Grace, forgiveness, mercy. Every time I was harsh with my child, Jesus said, Father, forgive him. He doesn't know what he's doing. Have mercy on him. Extend your grace to him. I died for that. And what does he say to people like you and me who get our words wrong all the time? He speaks words over us, words from the outside, food for our souls that we desperately need. Words like this, well done. Well done, good and faithful one. You are my beloved. I'm so proud of you. I'm delighted with you. I rejoice over you with singing. Words that our souls desperately need to hear. words of love, words of affirmation, words of embrace, words from the outside that have the power to heal our hearts and breathe life into our souls. And what happens over time, and I'm not there yet fully, but the more we learn to rejoice in the one who rejoices over us, the more we learn to fill our hearts with his love for us and the words he speaks over our lives, the more our hearts are full with that love, the more our words that spill out will be filled with the same love. A healed heart will overflow in words that heal and bring life. May God do that healing work in each one of our lives. Let's pray. God, we thank you for your word. We thank you for these proverbs, these short sayings, these observations, insights into life, and particularly this morning for the insights we get on our words. There's such power in our words, power that can heal or destroy. And Lord, as we've considered the nature of words that heal and that are wise, the honesty, the truthfulness of those words, the timeliness, the thoughtfulness, the gentleness, the restraint. Lord, in different ways, each of us falls so short. And so I pray that you would shine your light to point out to us gently, wisely, in ways that we can hear, the ways and the places in which we get our words wrong. But God, don't stop there. Would you help us to see that those ways that we get them wrong are really just a sign of what's filling our hearts? Because you tell us that what fills us will come out. So would you do the deeper work to heal our hearts, to fill them with your words that you speak over us, your grace, your forgiveness, your love, until we are so full of that, that it's that love and that gentleness and that kindness that spills out and blesses others. Make us wise with our words. We pray in Christ's name. Amen.